Okay. Who is Brian Pruka? I'll tell you everything I know about him. He joined our fellowship about a year ago. He has a tremendous voice. Dick nodded his head there, Brian. He agrees with me. He has a tremendous voice. He's a member of our choir. He serves on the Sunday service committee with six others. He's in charge of refrigeration at the co-op. What in his background enabled him to do this, do you think? Well, he worked with the founder of the land stewardship program for 3 or 4 years. He has a master's in the environment from the University of Wisconsin. He loves the Whitewater State Park and the Trumbull Wildlife Refuge. And that's what makes him a great person in charge of refrigeration of the co-op. Brian, thanks so much for sharing yourself with us today, okay? Having the courage to do so. Thank you.
I'm just going to just present some ideas, and this is not going to be a beautiful, poetic talk that's going to circulate around the world on the internet or anything. It's not polished, and I struggle to even make it kind of structured, but I'm hoping it promotes dialogue and discussion among us. And I did make the mistake of telling John that I thought this was the most important principle. And just as another background, I've gone to a few Unitarian churches over the years, or fellowships. I really like the fellowship they have in Rockford, Illinois, which is my hometown. But is this okay? Okay. But this has been the most welcoming and fellowship I've ever been in, where people really get to know one another and talk about things. But I'm potentially going to say some things that might be a little bit controversial or uncomfortable up here, just because I think we need to do that. We need to sometimes discuss things that aren't comfortable. I remember one of the first services I came to here a year ago, and it was a really good service, but somebody was talking about the fact that back in the 50s and 60s, you came to a Unitarian service, and there'd be all sorts of different ideas out there, and there were Republicans and Democrats and whoever and whatever. And the person said, and I don't remember who, and I'm not holding it against them, but they said, we're all Democrats today. And my first thought is, I'm not a Democrat. I'm also not a Republican. I'm going to tell you about my work with the Green Party in Wisconsin. I wouldn't call myself a Green, and I don't know what to call myself anymore, and I really don't like labels anyway. So the fifth principle, we affirm and promote the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and society at large, really derives from the fourth principle, which I brought here. Margaret gave me a lot of books to read, and then I went and bought two or three more to add to our library. But the fourth principle is, we affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And so the question is, how do you do that? And I think the fifth principle tries to address that by saying we do that by affirming and promoting both the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregation and within society. So I'm going to talk with you. I'm going to present two stands of conscience I've taken in my life that I found really uncomfortable with people who I really respect and admire and care for. And I'm also going to talk about at least how the first stand of conscience influenced me to look at the democratic process more thoroughly and try to figure out ways to make it work better. So I'm going to talk about two stands of conscience and one journey or adventure I had in terms of understanding democratic process. And this is where it gets a little bit, I keep fiddling with this thing because I, okay, sorry. The first stand of conscience is that I was very involved in the Ralph Nader campaign in 2000, which brought me into a lot of, it was uncomfortable. After watching Bill Clinton get elected in 1992, I didn't feel like he was that different from the Bushes. I mean, he was better than the Bushes, but that's not a hard thing to be. And I didn't want to vote for him again. And I lived in Madison. At the time, I went to Madison for my master's degree and stayed there. It's a beautiful place to live. And anyway, I wanted the ideas of Ralph Nader to be heard because I thought they offered something that neither of the major parties were offering. And of course, it was a problem because if you vote third party these days in the United States of America, or back then and still today, you're one, wasting your vote, right? Because only the two major parties get in, and you're a spoiler. You're actually messing up the system. And that was actually the hardest thing to deal with, because I would be confronted by people who were, you know, big advocates for the Democratic Party, and they would come to you and they'd say, "You're worse than those stupid, selfish Republicans, you know. You are. You're messing it up. You should be voting against Bush. And anything else is irresponsible." And we're talking about a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And that bothered me. But I felt it was important to, I campaigned and, or, well, I didn't campaign, but passed around literature and talked to people about Nader, and we had a big sign with his head that we took out to East Washington so people driving by would see Nader's face. And I thought it was important because it got some ideas out in the public to talk about that otherwise wouldn't get talked about. If we only have two choices, it really easily devolves into an us and them conflict. And it can devolve into just a few issues, and other ideas that might be useful to society don't get discussed. And I felt like it was really important that, you know, our system doesn't seem to allow for a lot of discussion sometimes. So I continued to promote Nader's campaign. That's the first thing I did that some of you might not really like. It got me to start thinking about the fact of how much I don't like how our voting system works. And I started, after the campaign was over, and I started doing research on different voting systems. And I can't remember if the Nader campaign talked about these things, but I started really getting into it because I didn't want to go through this again. I wanted to be able to vote my conscience, so to speak, or at least to talk about ideas I thought we should talk about. And that's where when I discovered what we now call ranked choice voting, which back in the year 2000, during the Nader campaign, was called instant runoff voting. And it was something that's been used in other parts of the world. It's been around for a long time. It's not a perfect system, but it seemed like a better system than the system we have. And I used to go out and do workshops to teach people how it worked. And what else did I do? I had a wine tasting party at my house one day where I invited all my friends over, and we had like four bottles of wine as our candidates. And how are we going to pick which wine bottle we're going to drink from? Which that was kind of fun. And we used the process of ranked voting. Just to illustrate the idea, and of course, ranked voting is useful if you're just voting for one candidate. The other idea I learned about was proportional representation, which is how you would elect a legislature and apportion seats based on how many votes each party got. So I did that for a few years. I got to meet John B. Anderson. Anybody here remember John B. Anderson? He ran for president in 1980. He's from my hometown of Rockford, Illinois. And he was a spoiler. And he was a person who really, his life evolved amazing. I'm just going to digress a little bit. He was a conservative Christian back in the 50s when he got elected in Rockford. And by the time of 1980, when he ran for president, he was a very liberal yet Republican. candidate. And after the election in 1980, I don't know when he started doing this, but he was a member of a group called Fair Vote, a nonprofit out of Washington, D.C., that I started learning from back in the early 2000s when I got interested in instant runoff voting. I had a chance to meet John Anderson at a conference we went to in Chicago, a Midwestern conference. Really remarkable man. And anyway, he was a spoiler in that, but he, after, you know, saying his part in 1980, he was trying to make the system better, the voting system better. And I thought that was really admirable and impressive. So then the year 2004 comes along, and I've been working with the Green Party in Madison for about 8 years at this point, both the state Wisconsin Green Party and the Dane County Green Party, helping get different ideas and candidates out there. And the leadership of our Madison group approached three of us that were involved in the party and asked us to run for public office. And I'm going to confess, I've run for public office. I'm never doing it again, I don't think. But and I didn't do a good job. But they asked me to run for county clerk. They were going to run three county candidates. Dane County is one of the most politically left counties in America, maybe the most, probably not, but very close. The Republicans don't bother to run in certain county issues because they're never going to even get close. And they asked me to run for county clerks. I like that because they said, you have experience with voting systems. The county clerk is, their job is to administer the voting system. And it was a chance to talk about instant runoff voting and proportional representation. Mainly, I wanted to talk about instant runoff voting. And so I did that. That was kind of the culmination of my learning experience about voting systems, and still an interest of mine to this day, although I don't pay attention to that much anymore about it. We're doing on time. I will tell you, I started having regret about voting for Nader several years later. Not enough to say I wouldn't do it again, but as we've, and this is another controversial subject, but as we've learned more about what happened during the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001, I really feel like the Bush-Cheney administration is primarily, may very well be primarily responsible for what happened. And that was a horrible event in our country's history. I think it's the worst event that's ever happened in some ways. And I don't know how many of you know this, but three skyscrapers fell that day. The World Trade Center Building 7 fell at 5:30 in the afternoon, and you can go on the internet and watch it. And our press hardly ever talks about it. I didn't know about it till about somewhere in 2010, 2012, I don't know, but I was absolutely shocked to find out that three skyscrapers fell down that day, and our media doesn't even bother to talk about it. So anyway, I had some, it's like, wow, why did I really let Bush win and that whole thing happen for that? Well, I still think it's right to talk about ideas, and I think that's kind of the theme of this talk here, is we have to be able to talk about uncomfortable ideas, because we're not all coming from exactly the same place. How much more time do I have left? I don't know how we're doing. We're doing all right. Yeah, okay. One thing was just to mention, the Green Party always tried to use consensus. You can only come to consensus when you're a pretty homogenous group, and it was kind of interesting to watch our Green Party struggle to reach consensus. We'd have 19 people in the room agreeing and one person didn't, and we'd spend 2 hours trying to help that one person go this way or that, or I don't know. I started me to thinking about how things work in terms of democracy. 50% plus one gives you freedom to you know, possibly make all the decisions. If you have a, you know, pure democracy, we really need basic rights underneath so that minorities are protected. Anyway, I'm going to try to get to the end here. I'm going to tell you about my other difficult time, which I think won't be comfortable for people, but my second stand of conscience happened in 2021 when I decided not to take any of the COVID vaccines. And it was a very uncomfortable time when we went through the whole COVID situation. And I never thought, you know, I lived in Madison, Wisconsin all my life. Most of my friends are progressives, and I would have considered myself to the left of most of my friends. And it was really hard to talk to people when COVID happened. And I was living in Caledonia. I moved from Rockford to Caledonia because I wanted to be in a small town because I felt like things were getting really dangerous, possibly in cities, and I'm happy to talk with people about that. It's ironic that I took a vaccine in April of 2020, the month after COVID happened, because I got a cut at work. I worked as a gardener at a history museum. I got a bad cut reading something. Somebody left a big shard of glass out there. I had to go in and get my finger sewed up. And I was surprised that they didn't inquire about my tetanus vaccine status, because I'd taken that in the past, believing that that was important. And I told the nurse, I said, "Will you look in my records and see if I should take another tetanus vaccine?" And she looked at my electronic records and came out with a vaccine, and I took it. And at the time, I felt that that was what I should do. I never thought I would be questioning vaccines within a year later. But if anybody wants to talk about, you know, for me, it's a decision that I don't think we know enough about those vaccines to take risks with our body if we don't want to. I can't think of anything that's more, that I have more control over in terms of not only for myself, but for other people, than maintaining my health of my body and my mind. And I didn't feel that those vaccines were gonna do more good than harm. That was, I had one of my best friends had mentioned something to someone about Brian, how irresponsible it was that Brian didn't take the vaccines. He's one of my best friends. He's my best friend in the gay community. And I was like, "Ron, you know me. I do my research. I was reading about COVID every day when this stuff was happening. And I came to this decision based on everything I looked at. I'm not trying to tell people, you know, don't tread on me. I really believe that this is not a good idea." So, and it was hard because I found it so hard to talk about it with any of my friends. And I'm glad we're past that. But what I'm hoping for is that we're going to be able to talk about things that are difficult more in the future. That's what I wanted to talk about, the fifth principle, because it's about how do we balance personal beliefs with our need to cooperate with the rest of society that we need in order to live a peaceful and positive life and help one another. And it got really hard. What else can I say? I'm a little bit concerned that today we trust science and scientific authorities the way people used to trust the Pope and the Catholic Church or this or that religious institution. If you had questions that maybe the science behind vaccines wasn't exactly what we think, you know, you could be labeled as a science idiot. And I went to graduate school because my GRE scores were very high and I got a fellowship to go to Madison. And I scored extremely well in logic and mathematics. And it was hard for me to hear people say, you know, if you believe that the COVID vaccines might be something to be a little cautious about, that you could be labeled as a science idiot. You don't understand science. Anybody who understands science would take those vaccines. So that was kind of hard for me to countenance. Mostly, I just wanted to be able to talk with my friends about things. And what else can I tell you? You know, well, I come to UU because I want to be able to discuss our search for truth and meaning. I think the fourth principle is the most beautiful part of Unitarianism, is that we're here together, read it again, I guess, in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, and I like meeting with other people who feel that and want to do that. And then the question is, how do we do that? And that seems to be this balance between personal conscience and then working together through some kind of decision-making method to work together and be a mutually supportive society. And which I think means, the shaming and shunning. I felt it really hard to go talk to my friends because they're like, Brian, don't talk about that. It's like, I wanted to be able to talk to my good friends about that. So I guess that's about it. I just wanted to put those ideas out there. And